Someone you know has probably experienced cancer, a heart attack, or stroke. The odds of experiencing one of these are high, which could result in bills for thousands of dollars in out-of-pocket expenses. How would you pay for it? With your savings? There is another option. It's called Active Care. Active Care is a supplemental health insurance policy that offers protection for covered cancer, heart attack, or stroke, and a choice of cash benefit options from $10,000 to $60,000. And with Active Care, the cash is yours to use as you see fit. Active Care is brought to you by Colonial Penn Life Insurance Company and is underwritten by Washington National Insurance Company. Get Active Care for cash, choice, and control. Visit ColonialPenn.com for more information. This is a limited benefit policy. This policy has limitations and exclusions. For costs and complete details of coverage, visit ColonialPenn.com.
The following interview was recorded for CFRO The Pulse, Vancouver Co-op Radio's daily news show. The Pulse airs Monday to Friday at 7 a.m. on 100.5 FM and streaming live at coopradio.org.
You're listening to The Pulse on CFRO here on Vancouver Co-op Radio 100.5 FM. You can find all of our previous podcast and interview excerpts at thepulse.coopradio.org. or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. I'm David Ball. On today's show, we're talking to the Union of BC Indian Chiefs about why it's calling this week for increased transparency about where there are COVID-19 cases among Indigenous populations, particularly in the most vulnerable areas, such as the downtown east side, after reporting, quote, multiple cases throughout the neighborhood, including staff and residents. Although there has been no confirmation from health authorities exactly where those are, as there's not a widespread outbreak, the union and other organizations say that it's essential that organizations on the front lines be more informed and kept in the loop of where there are cases before they can become an outbreak. The province, however, says that it cannot provide more granular or detailed data because it could violate privacy. And if you are experiencing any of the symptoms of COVID-19, dry cough, fever, muscle pain, and potentially a loss of smell, go to 429 Alexander Street testing site from 10 to 5 p.m., Monday to Friday. Here's Chief Don Tom, Vice President of the Union of BC Indian Chiefs. He's the elected leader of Tsarrtlip First Nation on Vancouver Island. Chief, thank you so much for joining us here on The Pulse on CFRO today.
Yes, happy to be here.
I wanted to start off this week. You raised an alarm about COVID-19 cases spread throughout the downtown east side, and we haven't actually heard of any official announcements to this effect. Tell me a little bit about what you know as the Union of BC Indian Chiefs.
The Union of BC Indian Chiefs office has been, or we're always in close touch with our community partners, and some of the those, whether they're shelters or other places, I think have expressed concerns, and not so many words, but expressed concerns regarding some positive cases and and I think around the criteria of what's being considered an outbreak. So I think, you know, with the vulnerable population in the downtown east side, and I think the efforts that the provincial government has put in within their state of emergency, and it's, you know, finding homeless some shelter and some housing, and I think the work it needs to continue, as well as testing, a quicker turnaround and testing being readily available downtown east side as well.
Now, of course, UBCIC has been based in the downtown east side in Gastown for at least a decade. I know now you're at 312 Main. So you're right in the heart of the neighborhood. But of course, also there are members in your organization from all over the province who end up in Vancouver, who end up from remote areas. Why are you particularly worried when it comes to Indigenous people in the neighborhood and beyond?
Well, I think from the declaration of a global pandemic, I think with the vulnerable population that we have downtown east side, and that they're sometimes forgotten. And for us to ensure that Indigenous or non-Indigenous people have the access to safe housing and have access to a facility if they are tested positive. So I think, you know, the concerns are that we have a vulnerable population in the downtown East Side, and we want to ensure that they're well looked after, just as any other British Columbian going through this pandemic.
Could you remind our listeners a little bit about why folks are particularly vulnerable? I know that we've talked a lot about on our program about, you know, underlying respiratory conditions, substandard housing, that kind of thing. But what are you seeing in terms of why there's a particular risk?
Well, I think that just the close-knit community and some of the interactions that they have, and as well as those who are struggling with addictions and to maintain their sobriety. And you know, there are a number of social determinants of health that are playing into factor here, and we just want to ensure that the resources available from the province are there to serve the East Side community, and that their well-being is looked after. And you know, I think of Crab Park, where they were removed, and you know, there's been a few instances where they were displaced and without any housing being provided. But you know, for us, is that many of our First Nations family and friends have had experiences in downtown East Side Vancouver, and so we just want to ensure that we are looking after them.
We were just talking to the Union Gospel Mission yesterday in our program, and it certainly seems like there could be a lot more information provided. Why are organizations working with these populations not being informed of cases nearby or in the neighborhood?
Yeah, there's a Downtown Eastside working group as well, and we're recommending early on that they be included in some of the work that the province is doing to find accommodations or housing or shelter for those who are displaced. And so, you know, it's just concerning, and during a pandemic like we're going through right now. And I think those who we just want to ensure that they have access to health care, housing, and testing, and that the government is doing what's required, and to ensure that there are no outbreaks. And you know, I think there's a number of shelters in the downtown East Side as well, and so the I think it's just right now a population that we're happy to advocate for.
It seems like data gathering and what we learn is just come to the fore as one major piece of this pandemic puzzle. And today we've seen a legal challenge from three First Nations in all regions of the province that are saying they're not getting data either. They're not learning who has cases in their area because of the, you know, the health authorities deciding to not give detailed local data.
Yes, I think First Nations deserve the opportunity to have the information available so that they can make informed decisions in terms of curfews, or if there's a need for a lockdown, a further lockdown. And, you know, 203 First Nations in BC, all over BC, there is, you know, some are in urban areas and some are in remote areas. And we've seen even the remote areas of BC First Nations be affected by the pandemic. And we support First Nations who are fighting to have that information be available. And, you know, in with the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People, or DRIPA for the province, you know, there is a degree of where First Nations need to be involved and have all the information available. And we're seeing that today. And I think we're, you know, for First Nations, they want to be able to mitigate the risks just as well as the province. And when you have limited information, you can't do that effectively.
I was just up in the Pemberton-Lillooet area, and the nations up there have all put barricades along the roads, stopping people from entering who aren't local. I'm wondering, your nation itself, is there any response that you'd like to share that you've kind of seen from your nation or nearby ones?
Well, I think the funding that was given from Canada to the First Nations in response to the pandemic is based on the 2016 census data. and it's based on the unreserved population, and so it doesn't, I think First Nations in BC are being not adequately funded, and if it's based on old population numbers, how many years of outdated information is missing, and that affects the funding as well. For me, here specifically in Vancouver Island, we've been fortunate not to have any positive cases here. You know, our members are being vigilant and keeping within their bubbles. And when the pandemic first hit, we saw a widespread of all of our members staying home. And so our community did declare a state of emergency, and we are currently on lockdown as well. And so I think we're faring fairly well, knock on wood, that we don't have any positive cases. So it's certainly, you know, here in Vancouver Island, you seem feel somewhat sheltered compared to the rest of BC. But what we're seeing now is COVID reaching to some of the most remote communities here in BC. And so that's concerning. And, you know, one of the concerns that we have is with the remote First Nations communities is the access to healthcare, and, you know, in the need of ventilators. I believe, you know, Tofino only has 2 ventilators at their hospital. So, you know, with the remote communities, it's a serious concern, and it can be life or death, and there may have to be difficult decisions to be made if there isn't the correct amount or the adequate amount of ventilators being available.
So they can't afford any kind of surge of local cases, any kind of community spread.
So when First Nations are asking for information, and so that they can make the informed plans, you know, it's a realistic concern. And during a world pandemic, that information should be shared. And, you know, there's been a few outbreaks of measles as well, and that information was shared with the First Nations communities. If there were any risks into the community, the health departments in First Nations were notified. So, I mean, there is a precedent, and I think a world pandemic compared to measles, I think, is just as concerning. And I think sort of data sovereignty is also in question here, too. Information that belongs to First Nations so that they can make these decisions.
Huh. It's data sovereignty. I haven't heard that term before, but that really captures, I think, what a lot of people are asking about in this case. I guess my last question for you is just about if what the lessons are, I think, from First Nations in BC in terms of what is most effective at getting people to really kind of take this seriously, to do our best to protect our elders and that kind of thing. Is there anything that you've learned that you'd like to share about what's most effective? What's made it such a success in some ways to see that sovereignty kind of implemented?
I think so far, like, the information specifically to my First Nation has come directly from us. And First Nations members or members, you know, they have a developed relationship with the health staff, and there's credibility, and they trust the information that we're putting out there. And so for a large part, we've done a lot of our own communications. And I think for First Nations, at the turn of the global pandemic, for a large part, they were unaffected. And I think, you know, they were unaffected. And unfortunately, there's been a number of outbreaks. And I think there is some COVID-19 fatigue, and people who are, you know, their social bubbles are small and not getting out. And so I think there is some fatigue that's going on here. But for, you know, the First Nations Health Authority has done a public campaign, TV public campaign, and also, you know, there's apps that are out there with information. BC has a COVID-19 app as well as Canada. So I know that a number of young people are accessing this information and looking at the numbers that are coming out daily for new cases. So I think it's the information that membership per First Nations communities that are receiving, and a direction coming from their First Nations leadership and health leadership within the community, advising them on best practices if they are to go out. And, you know, we're seeing a lot more young people wearing masks as well, and being more acceptable. So I think, you know, the culture is changing right now. It hasn't fully changed, but I think with numbers rising in First Nations communities, I think the importance of social distancing, wearing a mask will be underscored. And I think, you know, we'll see, my hope is that we'll see First Nations get a hold on this again.
Anything else you wanted to add, Chief?
Just that, you know, this is concerning times that we're going through, and whether you're downtown Eastside or rural First Nation, the reality of catching the virus or having an outbreak in the community is real now. And so the resources that could be and are available, we just want to ensure that data is being shared from the province, whether you're a downtown Eastside organization or First Nations. And I think information is helpful. With at the same time, respecting confidentiality of those who've been tested positive. So, you know, it's complex, but First Nations do deserve to have that information to make an informed decision. And, you know, we're seeing that from the Neutron List and the Chilcotin and other First Nations who are raising this concern. And Chilcotin, I know, has raised this from the very beginning. And so and First Nations have their own health authority. I think they should be part of those decisions and should be able to determine if that information is shared. So there's a bit complex, but in saying that, I think, you know, that it is justifiable that First Nations are asking for that data to be shared.
It's pretty neat to see the Tsilhqot'in and Tsleil-Waututh and Heiltsuk kind of partnership, because often these kind of big alliances get built around either one resource project that happens to impact them, or resources like salmon, or this is such health is actually universal. So it's kind of, this could be maybe something that we see more of, do you think?
I think in the after the Drupa, I think you're going to see First Nations, whether it's the Wet'suwet'en coming up with agreements or the Tsilhqot'in, or I think First Nations are realizing that the colonial system that limits their ability, whether that's through data, is just no longer acceptable. And, you know, it's now 2020 and the colonial ways are just behind us.
Thank you so much for your time, Chief. Great to have you on and such a wide-ranging conversation. Appreciate it.
Yes, my pleasure.
Take good care. And that was Chief Don Tom, Vice President of the UBCIC. He's the elected leader of Tsartlip First Nation. And if you are experiencing any of the symptoms of COVID-19, which includes a dry cough, fever, muscle pain, and potentially a loss of smell, please go to 429 Alexander Street testing site from 10 to 5 p.m. Monday to Friday. That's 429 Alexander Street.
CFRO The Pulse is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, a program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.
After my heart attack, cash from Active Care meant I had choices.
When I had cancer, cash from Active Care meant I didn't need to stress so much about money.
What is Active Care? Active Care is a supplemental health insurance policy that offers protection for covered cancer, heart attack, or stroke, and a choice of cash benefit options from $10,000 to $60,000. If you're diagnosed with cancer, a heart attack, or stroke, you could end up paying thousands of dollars or more in out-of-pocket medical bills. Active Care gives you protection at an affordable price. So, get Active Care for cash, choice, and control. Active Care is brought to you by Colonial Penn Life Insurance Company and is underwritten by Washington National Insurance Company. Visit colonialpenn.com for more information. This is a limited benefit policy. This policy has limitations and exclusions. For costs and complete details of coverage, visit colonialpenn.com.
The John Deere 324G skid steer from Brandt delivers large frame productivity in a mid-frame machine with extreme pushing power and industry-leading breakout force. Best of all, it's backed by Brandt, the best after-sales support in the business. That's powerful value delivered.